almost every time that city at least gets a mention in Joshua. So we're dealing with a book that names almost every city that we touch on in the Bible, and then there's some cities that that's the only place that they're named. So we need to spend some time on geography. You have gotten some archaeology, and actually we're going to touch upon some because I think I left some people confused on what I was talking about on Wednesday, and that involved kind of some of the archaeology of the situation. But the archaeology is very helpful because the basic world around us, even those who say they're religious, say basically the Exodus didn't occur, the conquest didn't occur. And so it's looking kind of at the archaeology and understanding the archaeology that hopefully enables us to at least have enough understanding that we can kind of make a defense for that conquest for the book of Joshua. So we are at the end here. We're at the rest. We're at the end of Joshua's days. And so there we kind of made our way through the book. I know given that it took us a few lessons to actually get into the land, you wondered if we would make it to the end, but we did. On Wednesday, I kind of spent some time just kind of going through the two kind of dates that are thought for the conquest. The Exodus 14:46, conquest 14:06, versus a lot of folks that don't necessarily are those who will put it at 1260, kind of 1220 time period. And there was, I think, kind of some questions about Hazar and the burning or destruction of Hazar with Joshua and with Deborah and Barak there. So I'm going to spend just a few seconds trying to kind of explain what I was saying there. That when you look at Hazar, Hazar was the biggest city in the land, in the time, in the times of Joshua, that it really just was much larger than any other city that was dealt with. And it kind of consisted of two components. There was this kind of larger plateau area, bigger part, and then there was this kind of higher tell part. And all of it was occupied in about the time period of when Joshua would have come in. So that lower Hazar was there, and kind of, in the archaeology, I was kind of looking for nice and clear dates, but it was a little fuzzy there. But, you know, basically, it appears that the lower Hazar, that was destroyed, burned by Joshua, or that with a 1406 B.C., that kind of time period, that portion of the city was destroyed. And so that's the burning that's mentioned in Joshua. And again, all of Hazar kind of got burned. But after that, the lower Hazar was not populated. That only the upper Hazar was occupied. Now what you then have is that Egyptian references, the Amari letters and conquest and stuff, they talk about Hazar. So what you have then is you have the conquest, the taking of the city, burning of the city by Joshua, if you're with a 1406 date, and then what you have is this period where, you know, Egyptian references to them, and then you come to Deborah. Now, and the judges, it doesn't mention the city being burned, but at least one excavator puts the last kind of big burning that's a Canaanite city at 1230 B.C. So, and then it seems to be kind of an Israelite city after that. So you look at the Bible and you say, well, who's the last time someone really had some good interaction with Hazar? And that's Deborah and Barak. So when I talk about two burnings, it's kind of looking at that and saying that 1230 burning dealt with Deborah and Barak. Now, the Philistines, all those people were kind of coming around, but I think I have maybe some arguments as to why those wouldn't, that it would be Deborah and Barak. But that's not recorded in the Bible, it's kind of in archaeology. Now you come, and if you are a 1206 person for kind of the time period the 1220s for the coming in and the conquest of the land. All right, so you've got Joshua still covered, right? Because you're in that 1230 time period. But what happens is that, at least archaeologically, there's not a lot of Canaanite stuff after that. So how can you have Jabin king when Deborah and Barak come around, because there's really not much of the city after that 1230 burning, and then really the next major occupation is Israelite. So what the Bible critics say is, oh, you know, these Bible writers and stuff, they don't know history. They don't know what we know. And so what they do, they say, oh, King Jabin, King Jabin. So that this Joshua, Deborah, and Barak thing all got mixed in together when they were writing this several hundred years later. And so kind of, I think, some of the confusion when I was saying, oh, well, there was just one conquest, that one burning, and kind of all that mixed up. That's what the critics kind of say, is that they can't understand, well, you know, Jabin seems to be the name of the king of Hazar, whether it's 1800 B.C., 1400 B.C., 1230 B.C., it tends to be the name that's used for the king of Hazar. Now, those that would believe that 1200 kind of date for the conquest, I mean, you have the one burning, so you're good there. And what you just say is, well, I mean, we read Judges, and it doesn't talk about the city being burned. So, you know, someone who would believe in that later date, who is not critical and coming up with this all kind of mixed up stuff, you know, they can respond to it. It is respondable to it. But again, taking that later date, it's very difficult to get Joshua destroying the city and Deborah and Barak kind of beating up on Hazar and his general. So does anyone still have questions then about Hazar and the confusion that I caused on Wednesday? Okay, if you do, I know you'll come see me after class, so that's fine. All right, so we look, again, as I've gotten ahead of myself, we look at Joshua, and we look at 23 and 24, and it just, again, it is so evident, this nature of Joshua, of his character. And there, you know, speaking ability, Joshua 24, I mean, it's powerful, right? I mean, you know, you read what he has to say, and I mean, you're convicted. I mean, you wonder sometimes if Paul learned and studied some from Joshua. I think there's good evidence that we know David read the book of Joshua, and that because he uses that strong and courageous, it's mentioned there. So his ability to really string, and then the fact that, you know, in the days of Joshua and in the days of those elders, the people that knew Joshua were faithful to the Lord. It's when that generation passed away that there were issues. So again, his obedience, his devotion to God. So, you know, we studied and looked at that character of Joshua, and as we've gone along and gone through the events, we've looked at that character. And, you know, I think, you know, when I was trying to put together kind of this concept of character, you know, it really, you know, what you think of is, okay, here are events that occur in Joshua, and here's where we see the nature of what Joshua was all about. And that's, I think, we know a person's character by how they respond to situations. And boy, do we get that in Joshua, that we really get to know Joshua and his character. Now, when the people were getting ready, we spent a lot of time preparing the people to get ready to get in that land. And we look at that end of Deuteronomy, we look at the beginning of that Joshua, and what do we see? We see, you know, God telling Joshua to be strong and courageous, Moses telling the people in Joshua, you be strong and courageous, the people telling Joshua, you be strong and courageous, and Joshua telling the people, be strong and courageous. Everyone was, you know, they were working on getting everyone on that same page there. And, you know, we kind of went over several reasons, right? That 40 years ago, they had failed big time. And they were not strong and courageous. And so here they are. None of these people will spend another 40 years in that wilderness. They're ready to come into the land. And so there, that discussion there. If looking at the passages and you put Joshua as a young man there, a young man needs strength and to be strong and courageous there. And there's good reasons for that. You think again of Timothy in that, so you would connect that. And just again the fact that, you know, Joshua is in the footsteps of Moses. Who would want to follow up Moses? I mean, wouldn't you be a little fearful following up, being the next leader after Moses? And so that encouragement to be strong and courageous. So, you know, we looked at all these challenges. You know, the people had failed. He's a new leader, a new generation, a swollen river, a walled city, an unknown city and people. And we see that as Joshua goes through there, he deals with all these issues. And then the biggest issues, this river and this walled city that a simple man couldn't handle, God took care of and looked after that matter. And so, you know, we come to Joshua and we come to Jericho, that city, and really when you look at and dig up the city, one of the things that's outstanding about that city is its walls. And, you know, the writer of Hebrew, when he's going to go in the hall of fame of people of faith, that, you know, those people that were walking around that city, you know, said it was by faith that those walls fell. It wasn't the people walking around and just that sound of their shouting and the trumpets. It was the Lord. But those people had faith to obey the Lord and to do that. Because if you were looking at any practical military application, that would have been the dumbest thing to do in the world, is just to walk around a city and expect the walls to fall down. And then we have also Rahab. So this whole thing with Jericho, that we see Rahab, but we see the people having faith in the Lord. We see that Jericho and Ai had to fall, and that all the issues with Ai because of the sin of Achan and dealing with that. And then that as soon as as Ai was taken, it allowed the people to move up and down the hill country, and then they go to Shechem. And so at Shechem, I mean, you're in hostile territory, right? I mean, you've kind of knocked down the two cities that are a barrier. But Moses said, when you get in the land, you go to Shechem, and you read the law, you have half of the tribes on one hill, the other half, and you do the blessings and the curses that are laid out in Deuteronomy. And so there, Joshua, following the Lord, heads up to Shechem and does that. They come, you have the whole issue with the Gibeonites, but what that does is then stir up all the southern kings who are upset that the Gibeonites would do such a thing. And so that ends up with all those southern kings being destroyed. Then, you know, building these people, be strong and courageous, that those five kings are taken out. And Joshua has the leaders of the people to come up and to put their foot on the necks, to just like, I'm going to make your enemy your footstool. And you know that had to make a strong impression. And very visual. And to them that they were conquering these people. And, you know, part of the reason that that's very helpful is because when they go up to the north, they're taking on the biggest city in the land. So it was important for them to have faith in the Lord, to be strong and courageous. So then the northern king, Jabin, gets all these kings and say, hey, these guys are really, you know, causing a lot of grief. And so all those northern kings come together, and then they get defeated. So then what you have is this kind of, there you have your conquest done. And so then we have this allotment. And, I mean, as you're reading through this, hopefully, did y'all get a feel? Did you kind of wonder, why in the world did these people keep sitting around and not take the land? Did y'all kind of think about that as we were going kind of quickly through the lot? I mean, you know, it's like, okay, you got the land, people, but they kind of stick there in Gilgal. And so Joshua, it says, then is old, advanced in years. The people come together, and they're going to divide the 9.5 tribes to go. So you get Ephraim, Judah, Manasseh kind of go out and do kind of their job. And so then, or at least definitely Judah, Ephraim. And so we kind of, at Gilgal, we have Caleb involved there. And so that's kind of 14 through 17 that they're at Gilgal. And then we come again to Joshua 18. The people still hadn't taken all the land. There's still seven tribes who haven't gone out and taken their land and occupied it. So then at Shiloh, you know, Joshua once again goes through, says, okay, folks, go out, possess the land. So there you get the cities of refuge set up, the cities for the Levites to live in. The eastern tribes are finally sent home. Then you also have in there, though, we have that incident with the eastern tribe and setting up the altar, and the people kind of concerned about that. So, I mean, we then kind of, you know, through that point, we've kind of gotten to the chapter. So, you know, we kind of think of Jericho and the conquest. We kind of look at all those cities with the allotments. You know, we'll spend maybe a little time with the cities of refuge, because those are very important lessons about fulfillment of land promise. And then we kind of get to 23, 24 where we're at today. But we're still left scratching our heads, right? You know, these seven tribes, people, go out and take the land. What was one of the problems about taking some of this land that they had issues with? We kind of spent some time with that when we were kind of going over all that allotment stuff on Wednesday. So who was kind of down in the low regions, in those nice plain valleys where you could raise a lot of food? People with what kind of war instrument? Chariots. So, you know, hill country can kind of take that. So they were fearful of those chariots and kind of going down. Even though the Lord, I mean, you know, Hazor, he had those chariots and stuff. The Lord kind of took care of that. I mean, Deborah, when that came along, those chariots got taken care of. But the people didn't really take that. In fact, Dan gave up to such an extent that he went off to a whole different place to occupy the land. So, you know, that's kind of where we have gone through to where we get to today. And so, let's see, actually 21 there, but we're kind of there. We're at Shiloh. All those things are being laid out. And again, you know, Joshua comes out, you know, thus the Lord gave to Israel all the land that he swore to give their fathers, and they took possession of all of it, and they settled there. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their fathers. Not one of all their enemies had withstood them, for the Lord had given all their enemies into their hands. Not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the houses of Israel had failed. It all came to pass. So that's kind of, again, those refugees, that's kind of where we end up in that kind of discussions of at Shiloh. And so then, again, we come here to the end, to Joshua 23, 24. I am not, you know, absolutely positive anyway, but it seems like this event in Judges 2 possibly set off these events in Joshua 23. Because after this description in Judges 2, it's then described that Joshua died. So now this Judges 2 could have occurred, you know, after Joshua 23, but it could have precipitated Joshua 23 and 24. So, you know, this angel comes and he has this message, you know, I brought you up from Egypt. I brought you into the land that I swore to give your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land. You shall break down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be snare to you. So now, that sets up all of Judges, right? And then goes on into the kings and their final collapse. That what you read in Judges 2 is going to be their downfall and what's going to send the people into captivity finally. So, but you get a message from God like that, that's going to shake you up a little bit, right? So then you've got, you know, Joshua brings the people back to Shechem. He is, you know, it seems like he is at the end of his years. He's very close to dying. And so whether Judges 2 occurred before or after, he wants one last time to talk to the leaders and to talk to the people. And so, you know, it says, a long time afterward, when the Lord had given the land rest from all their surrounding, Joshua's old, well advanced in years, Joshua summoned all of Israel, its elders, its heads, its judges, its officers. And, you know, basically he says in Joshua, you know, God's fulfilled all. And then we see in Joshua 23 that kind of dealing maybe with the people or kind of everybody to kind of lay out that covenant. So what we see is kind of, you know, when we were covering Shechem the first time, we kind of threw this up, that an artist kind of rendition or outline of the book of Deuteronomy, and really dealing with 23 and 24, that you're going to come into this land, you don't go to the left, you don't go to the right, because the curses are in there. You're going to be snares. The Lord, you know, you're off the path. And so 23 and 24 really lay out, you know, what 28, sorry. Let's see, where am I at? Anyway, the blessings and the curses. It's, I think, 27, 28, sorry. So you've got those blessings and curses being laid out, and the Lord's saying, you know, keep these commandments and realize the promises that you have in blessings, but there are also promises if you fail. So here's kind of Joshua's discussion to those leaders. Here's all the things that he lays out to them. You know, I'm old. I'm advanced in years. You're going to have to take the lead now. I'm not going to be around. It's kind of what he's saying. You know, you've seen. They've seen what the Lord has done, right? This generation. That, you know, they've seen the crossing of Jordan. They've seen the walls of Jericho fall. They've seen all these kings defeated. They've seen that, you know, one has sent 1,000 running. They've seen these things done. And he reminds them, when you see these things, you see these great victories, remember, it wasn't us. It was the Lord who had done these things. And so, he's the one who's fought. And so I have, you know, we've been victorious. And I've allotted this inheritance to you. But there are nations that remain. Not all of them. You've got, you know, we went through that list, right? Part of kind of going through that list was to say, you know, you got like 30 cities or so, a whole bunch of cities. But when we went through kind of that exercise of marking those on a map, what we noticed is there was a whole lot of cities that remained. And so the people had to go take those. And so he says, there are nations that remain. And, you know, besides the ones that I've cut off, and that that they go, you know, from the Jordan to the Great Sea in the west, this land is ours. You've got to get the people to go out there and take that land. All that land is ours. It's just we haven't gone in and occupied it. And so the Lord, just as he's been with you, he's going to push them back before you. He's going to drive them out of your sight. And you're going to possess the land, just as the Lord your God promised you. So he kind of, again, reminds, listen, the Lord has promised. You're going to go forth, you're going to drive these people out. And you're going to have, the Lord's going to be with you to do that. Therefore, be strong, right? Be strong, be courageous, to keep and do all that's written in the book of the law of Moses. Keep those things that, you know, don't turn aside to the right hand, to the left hand. Don't mix with these nations. Don't, you know, make mention of their names, much less don't offer sacrifices to them. You know, don't swear to them. Don't bow down to them. You cling to the Lord just as you've done today. And again, what is the problem that we're going to see? Is that the people are going to look around and say, well, you know, these Amorites have been in the land a whole long time, and, you know, and again, I guess appealing the nature of lust and stuff of these idols and idolatry worship, that the people followed after them. Because, you know, a lot of times it's easy for people to follow the things what they can see, right? It's hard to follow those things you can't see, and that you know, your little kids, you know, they'll more or less hopefully obey you when you're in there, but you go out of the room, you know, that disobedience can occur, and it can be hard to follow. And so here God's saying, you know, I'm your spiritual king. I'm going to be that spiritual king. You're not going to have kings in your cities. You're not going to have kings around you. I'm the one who's going to lead you. I'll protect you. All you have to do is do what I've said, to obey my laws. And so, you know, he says, okay, listen, the Lord, he's driven out all these strong nations. We've gone over Hazar. Hopefully I've impressed upon you just how powerful and great a city Hazar was. Gone. Jericho, walls, totally impressive. Gone. All these great Amorite cities, gone, defeated. More even to the point of the destruction was of such a nature, the cities, the fields are left behind. That's how total the destruction was. They didn't have to burn and destroy these cities. Those vineyards and those cities were there for them to go in and occupy. That's to what extreme they had overcome these strong nations. And so no man's able to stand for you. One man can put to flight 1,000. It's because the Lord fights for you, just as he said he was. So you lay out all those things, and the Lord has done this. And they've got to admit, right? The Lord has done these things. And so he says, you know, be careful, therefore. You know, love the Lord. Because you see what is with it when the Lord is on your side, right? So what if the Lord is against you? That's not good, is it? If the Lord is against you, you're not going to be able, one man against 1,000. You're going to have oppressors and all these things that we read about in Judges. And that continues their conquest of and final being taken away in Babylonian captivity. All those things are going to come. And so Joshua is looking at those leaders, you know, again, possibly the last time he's going to see them, and saying, be careful to love the Lord. Yeah. Yeah.
You haven't completed the job. You didn't finish it. Now, you have some serious challenges that are going to be before you.
Yeah. You have gotten behind because, again, he had to keep pushing them. Go out. Occupy that land, exactly. And, again, you know, I mean, who here would have said, okay, the Lord told me to walk around this city once a day and then on the seventh day to walk around 7 times. How in the world is that going to bring down a wall? But that's what the Lord, they did that by faith because they had that belief. And I think this, there are good examples here of what faith is all about.
Person was supposed to follow and learn Joshua to the point of doing.
And that, you know, you're right, Joel. It is, you know, such a strong leader there in Joshua. We see, as you say, that those who served with him, who were leaders in his time, that the people followed. But for some reason, those who came after just weren't willing to be those leaders. And there is a particular kind of leader you want to be, right? I mean, it's not just a leader lead them off into idolatry. It is a leader to serve the Lord. And so, I mean, you know, this is a tremendous lesson to parents, to elders, of raising up that next group of leaders to follow, to obey. And what that means is you got to be reading this and following and understanding this, because this is where we get our instructions from. And so for some reason or other, you know, the Levites fell down, or they just, you know, they made the accomplishment. So they just got tied down with the mundane things of life. And again, it is hard, you know, it's easy to follow Joshua, but it's hard sometimes to be the person who steps out in your community and say, guys, what are you doing worshiping Baal? That's the hard thing. And that appeared to be the hard thing for the people there, for those people in those towns and villages. And then the hard thing was to accept, okay, I'm looking around, I'm living this life, and where's my king? He's up in heaven. Now, I mean, we have gone through enough years of history or whatever and had the Bible long enough time, the New Testament, to kind of get that concept. But that was a hard concept. That wasn't the way religion and things were done in the times of Joshua, and the people failed. Yeah. Yeah, and that, again, that just, it is so important that, of teaching the kids. It's not, again, a root thing. It is, why are we following the Bible? What has God done? What is His promises? Why do we have confidence in the promises of God? Because that's where Joshua hit, right? God has promised these things. You know, these promises have been made. You do not go to the left. You do not go to the right. These are the promises I have for you. And it takes someone who's not just lets themselves get tied up and with all the chaos of living day to day, but realize that there's a place, there's a goal that I'm going to, be it if I lived in the days after Joshua or if I live today. And that just, it's important. I think as you hit, that it goes down to every family. There's a responsibility of leading your family. Yes?
There's a lesson here on how quickly that can fall apart. Here's Joshua 24. The people are committed. They're making that commitment. And then when Joshua dies, in Judges 2, 10, and 11, it says there grew up a generation that did not know God, and then that whole cycle starts.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It starts first with the individual, and it's the individual to the household. But he does say, as for me, this is my own personal decision that I make.
Yeah.
And these other people needed to do this.
And I think that drives very well the point that Joel made and that was made about how quickly it occurred. Is, you know, what you know, what as for me and my house? And, you know, Joshua warns the people, listen, you say you're going to keep the covenant. You say you're for it. But I look out and I see nations remaining. I see you mixing it up with these other people, marrying with these people, and the idolatry going on. You're on the cusp of just going right off into all those curses. And so, I mean, he's trying to, in that point, to pull them back. But again, he's making the point, you know, it's you in your house. Now, I don't know, you know, sometimes you may be, you get a leader like Joshua. And I mean, Joshua hung out with Moses, and we see how that made Joshua such a leader. And even the people that Joshua hung around, those leaders there, that, you know, the people followed them there. So, you know, you're kind of, your working assumption would be, well, the next generation is going to follow because they're going to see the examples that I've set out, how I've led, just as Joshua kind of learned from Moses. So I guess it was, I mean, my working assumption is that that was part of the assumption those people had made, that seeing those examples, that, you know, they would follow just along. But apparently there was some missing teaching. There's something missing there. So that the generation, you know, rebellious youth, they always want to do something different from what the generation did before. But I think a lot of it was they were just living in the land, and they got tied up with the day-to-day living stuff and not mindful of the spiritual stuff. So anyway, good comments. Anyone else have some comments they'd like to make? Okay. You know, for if you turn back, cling to the remnant of these nations among you, and you make marriages with them so that you associate with them, know for certain that your Lord your God will no longer drive them out. They're going to be a snare, a trap to you, a whip on your side, thorns in your eyes, until you perish off this good land. And, you know, exactly that's what's going to happen. I mean, I think, you know, it's almost worthwhile to have a class, Joshua to Jeremiah, that you look at those ends, because you see the fulfillment, all of these things that Joshua says is going to happen. You read Jeremiah, and you can just check them off, and you can see it. So he makes that case to his leaders, kind of keep on running their time. You know, I'm about to go away, but you know that not one word has failed of all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one of them has failed. But just as all these good things have happened, all those good promises have been fulfilled, know for certain that all of these curses and all these bad things, that just as God promises the good, if you follow the good, just realize those promises for not following the good are on the other side there. So, again, just you read through there and you just see how powerful that is. And so, you know, we get to Joshua 24. He just lays out the history. And I kind of was almost thinking, you know, as we were going through here, I said, well, maybe I should have had a class on Joshua 23 and then Joshua 24 because there is so much good stuff here. But he just lays out the history. And we could, again, spend a good bit of the class just going through the logic of how he's laying out all of this history to them of what the Lord has done. Now, you know, giving and seeing what the Lord has done through all these times, that bringing Abraham out, you know, bringing you out of Egypt. You're in here in the lands of the Amorites, you know, you've crossed over. And they've been conquered. Now, therefore, fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and in faithfulness. So Joshua's saying it's not just a matter of words. It's a matter of in faithfulness there. And so they make a covenant, and they take a large stone. Again, we've talked something about Shechem, that there is this large stone there, that it would seem that this is the stone that Joshua did this, that they wrote the words on the book of the law, on the book of the law of God, and he set it up under a tamarind at the sanctuary of the Lord. So this is a witness to them that this stone here that if you deal falsely with the Lord, just realize that as a witness that things are set up there. And so anytime they were to come into the land or they come to Shechem, they would see written here, you know, here's the stone. This is a witness that was made that we said that we're going to serve the Lord. And so we kind of hit that. So there the people, you know, they wrote that. And let's see. Okay. So that promise is made. The witness is made. The people says, we're going to serve the Lord. And Joshua says, that's good, but it's, again, for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord for sure. And again, I would love to have, it would be nice to read then about Joshua's house and the people down there. We just, the Bible doesn't give us any more about that. So, in the kind of last few minutes, always cruel to do this to people, in the class, I mean, part of the things that we were hoping to do with the class is to not only study the book of Joshua, to learn the character of Joshua, but also to help just give you some understanding of kind of a lot of these questions about the conquest. So I guess, first of all, you know, kind of shake your head or something. Did you know that a lot of people kind of say, well, the conquest never happened? Have you had dealings with that? Okay. All right, few. So a few of you have. And so, and again, you read kind of anything on biblical archaeology, you get a lot of this. But there is, realize that those people here. So in a rapid kind of fashion, it's always hard to do these things in 13 classes covering all the objectives that we have. Do you have kind of at least a better understanding of how you might talk to someone if they were to say, oh, the conquest never happened? Now, again, wouldn't expect just from sitting here from this class or whatever that you have all of the answers, but do you think you can at least maybe go look somewhere or kind of at least understand some of the things for a ready defense? Okay, all right. The character, yeah. And then again, you know, that, you know, I think kind of concept. I think most of y'all have studied Joshua before. I mean, did you conceive a different kind of way the conquest occurred? Is this pretty much the way you remember Joshua and the conquest? So if that is, kind of shake your head, let me know if we accomplished anything there. Okay, good. Joel, he's my man. Salvation to me. And to y'all. So again, about the character of Joshua, did we help kind of give you a better understanding? I mean, I think most of us know Joshua is a pretty impressive dude, but in the things that we've gone through, has this helped strengthen or make even a stronger impression on you on the character of Joshua? All right, good. All right, a lot more yeses on that. That's good. That's good, because that was definitely one of our key objectives, and I think one of the important things is just looking at that nature of Joshua. And just as Joshua learned from Moses, there is so much that we can learn from the example of Joshua. So let us not be like the generation after him. Let us be a generation that follows that example of Joshua. All right, thank you very much.